there's no perfect job out there. The grass is brown everywhere. Everybody here wants to get to the big leagues. I said, the way you get to the big leagues is get your players there first. You start off first by being really good where you are. Do the right thing by your guys there, the guys you're with right now.
Welcome back, coaches, and thanks for taking this call. You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse, your podcast home for certified audio gold. Our mission is to connect you guys with some of the best baseball minds in our game today, and we'll be talking through various aspects of our game, giving each of us tremendous insight and information that we can all use to develop and grow ourselves as coaches, positively enhance our players and our programs, but also help grow the game of baseball along with you. And we're very thankful to have each of you guys listening in. I'll be your host, Jeremy Schiedinger from the ABCA, and with this final episode of our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast for 2016, we sat down with coaching legend Jerry Weinstein, an ABCA Hall of Famer and an impressive 48-year continuous member. Wow. Coach Weinstein has dedicated his life to our game, and throughout his career, with stops at UCLA, USC, building the program there at Sacramento City College, to his time with the Colorado Rockies and then now manager of Team Israel, Jerry has served as a tremendous steward for baseball, and he isn't showing signs of slowing down anytime soon. In this podcast, guys, we get Jerry rolling on several fronts, including his presence on social media, his ideas and thoughts on how we can change our pregame activities to better fit the demands and speed of the game, gives our coaches perspective on guided discovery, helping our players become less codependent and more invested in their process. And we wrap up with Coach Weinstein providing great advice for coaches to help you find your passion and really enjoy your time in the game. This episode is packed with A++ information, and we know you're going to love it. In case you missed it, Coach Weinstein was chosen to get back up on the main stage with us, a spot he knows very well. It'll be one of our featured speakers for upcoming ABCA convention, January 5th through the 8th out in Anaheim, California. We're almost 1 month away from baseball heaven as we're staring down 4 days filled with over 25 coaching clinics, the world's largest baseball trade show with over 300 plus exhibitors, hot stove discussions, networking opportunities. It goes on and on, coaches. But we hope you have made plans to join us in Cali this January. The mission behind this podcast is to give our coaches beyond quality coaching insight and information that can help you grow and develop. And it's all about providing excellent content and serving our members. We hope if you're listening in, you're part of the association. And if you have, thank you. We appreciate your loyalty, your commitment to improving yourself and our game. But if you haven't, and you just want to learn a little bit more about what we're doing for our coaches, head over to abca.org after the show, click through, find out for yourself why the ABCA is the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity. All right, guys, it's time to grab a pen and some paper. We wound up Coach Weinstein and unleashed him on this podcast. Enjoy the extensive amount of wisdom coming from Jerry through your speakers. Thanks for listening in, guys, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball. Coaches, you are in for a treat today. We're sitting down with Jerry Weinstein, and we're going to talk through a number of different topics. This podcast is going to be almost all-encompassing. We're trying to hit a number of different areas. But first and foremost, I want to welcome the 48 continuous year member for the ABCA, and we're passionate about having Jerry with us in Anaheim this year and his work throughout baseball from Sac City all the way up through the Rockies, through the Cape Cod League, and now with Team Israel. Jerry, thanks for being on the podcast with us today.
My pleasure. Looking forward to it.
You're an easy choice to get on here, man. Again, you're talking about dedicating 50 plus years of your life to our game, and you're still the busiest guy in America, man. And we were talking before we got going here, you know, I think if guys reflect back a couple months ago, you helped guide a Team Israel, their first ever berth in the 2017 World Baseball Classic. And, you know, off record, you actually beat one of my close friends, Liam Carroll, with Great Britain. But I know he spoke obviously very highly of competing against you. Then you left there and you went to the Instructional League for a few weeks. And then you just got back from a clinic in Curacao. Can you talk us through what's keeping you busy these days and all the traveling you've been doing?
Well, this is one of those bench me or trade me scenarios. I obviously got way too many irons in the fire.
Sure.
And, you know, juggling. During the summer, it was interesting, you know, kind of juggling the Cape roster, which is always in transition, and then trying to get our WBC roster set for qualifier. And by the way, Great Britain had an outstanding team. Liam did a tremendous job with those
Absolutely.
Guys. They had three big league pitchers, and they had five Bahamian guys who could fly, five four-flat runners, and we were very fortunate to beat those guys. But I haven't been busy.
That's it. That's an understatement.
As a matter of fact, on Sunday I'm going to Washington, D.C., for the winter meetings. They're having a press conference for the WBC, so I'll keep up in there and get out, and hopefully things will slow down a little bit over Christmas before we get rolling again.
There you go. Well, bless you, man. We obviously your dedication to the game is well documented, and I think kind of leads us right into question number two. You've been a passionate ABCA member for a long time. We were just reflecting on some well-past conventions. It's hard to put a number on how many times you've been on the main stage, and obviously looking forward to Anaheim. You're one of our featured clinicians, Jerry, but you're a featured clinician anywhere you go, man. You speak at a lot of different venues. I know you've spoken at CatcherCon with Zan Barksdale and his crew, and you're just one of those guys that people want to get on the stage, but I think that speaks volumes to your passion for teaching and developing and imparting wisdom and getting some of that stuff out.
I mean, for me, I'm about baseball, and I'm about what's best for the game right now, especially now in kind of the twilight of my career.
There you go.
You might say, even though I'm going pretty strong.
Sure.
And so, you know, I'm just trying to get information out. I'm not trying to rewrite the Ten Commandments, and I'm not, you know, this isn't the gospel when I start talking about it. It's just talking about experiences I've had in baseball that may benefit players and coaches. I do a lot on social media, on Twitter. I put some stuff out every day, but basically stuff out of my file cabinet that maybe someone else can use. It's not like it's the only way to do it. And it's the, you know, the one thing about baseball, there are no always or nevers. And, you know, so you're just throwing out stuff that maybe will work with certain individual players, because it's all about the individual player. And anytime I talk, when I give a PowerPoint, I always put up a buffet table up there, and you know, you're not going to eat everything off this table. You take what you like and what works for you or works for the individual player. And I think that one of the things that we need to be careful of is that we don't try and make, you know, a one size fits all kind of deal. And so just trying to share information, because I've screwed up more than anybody. I've probably coached as many or more innings or games as anybody, because we would play a lot of games at Sac City in 25 years. We played 200 Winter League games. And so I've been involved in a lot of games. I'm willing to change. I've coached and I've done some stupid things, and I've learned from them, and I make changes to help players and help me become a better coach and communicator and all those other things. But it's been an interesting journey, and I continue to want to learn and get better, and the game is changing as we speak. There's a lot of different things going on in baseball, from the technology to the analytics, and if you're not willing to change, you're gonna fall behind. It's one of those, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. If you stay in the same, you're getting worse. So every day you got to take a little step forward, or at least try to, and you know, I'm pretty consumed with that process.
Sure, that's a fact. You couldn't have said it any better. I mean, looking forward to Anaheim, I'm sure you've got a lot of guys that you're interested to catch up with and good friends in the game. And but to your point, I know you're also there for the clinicians as well, besides yourself, in terms of hearing other guys. Talk about Anaheim a little bit and how excited you are looking forward to being there in less than about a month.
Well, just to listen to the speakers there, I always look forward, because I go there not only to share information, but to gain information. And you know, I may be talking to a JV coach from whatever high school, and he may have, hey, we're doing this, and it's an eye-opener. You know, you can learn from everybody, and certainly in that clinic. And when I go to the clinics, and I'm on the docket, I go to the clinics.
Right.
When I'm not speaking, I'm in the clinic, because I'm looking for info to help me become better, but specifically to help our players, and again, more specifically, Rocky players, develop and become better players.
Real specific to Anaheim, your clinic is titled A System for Controlling the Running Game While Executing the Pitch. Now, I've seen the layout. I've kind of got the insider info here. I've seen it. It's very extensive, a lot of great information on it. But can you, through this podcast, can you give our listeners some insight into what you're going to be talking about on the main stage, maybe the mission of your clinic, what you really want to get across to those guys?
Well, I think that, you know, from what I've seen, not only in college baseball and high school baseball, but in professional baseball as well, that we get our pitchers too divided relative to holding runners. And the most important thing is the individual pitch, executing that pitch. And the reality of the running game is less about stopping stolen bases, but more about controlling the secondary lead, so that your middle infielders, are not under duress every time they try and turn double play, stopping runners from going from first to third, maybe giving yourself a chance to force the lead runner in a bunt situation, stopping the runner from advancing on balls in the dirt because he has a shorter secondary lead because you're more efficient out of the stretch. And so big focus on the mechanics of the stretch move, but also just a heightened awareness relative to delayed steals and just some techniques other than just throwing over to first base 19 times to stop the running game, which to me is bad for the game. We throw over too much. It's bad for the spectators. The game's too long. Bad for the defenders. It's bad for everybody. And so, you know, I'm looking for an alternative relative to stopping some of those things that go on first base relative to really aggressive secondary leads and longer secondary leads and better jumps with some techniques relative to the mechanics of the stretch move, as well as some tempo things that you can use to control the running game and some other strategic techniques, which will allow the pitcher to throw over less and worry about the runner less and get more connected with his target and more connected with the most important thing that he does on a pitch-by-pitch basis, and that's execute his hitch.
I'm certain that the room is going to be full for your clinic, Jerry. You do such a great job conveying that information, so we're excited about that. We're obviously thankful that you joined the docket and you're going to be up there with us in California. You're kind of a new school, old school guy. I mean, you're on Twitter. You're very active at J1 Catching, but you're also on Facebook. And, you know, I've heard you talk before. You've kind of got access to videos and content through the Rockies that most guys don't have the privilege of seeing. And so really that comes back to the stuff that you're putting out is another indicator that you're a lifelong learner. You're constantly challenging the status quo. I think almost the dreaded words that we always talk about in coaching are, this is how we've always done it, right? And you're that constant guy. You're just critically evaluating your thoughts and your opinions on basically every facet of the game. It's not just stuck to base running or catching, or it's across all facets. But for you, how important is that you've adopted that mentality of constantly looking for the next or really evaluating the why? And then why should other coaches really be the same way?
Well, I don't think this is just in baseball. I think this is life in general that, you know, I just happen to be very narrow. I've got this one cylinder, which is filled up with baseball. And, you know, obviously my family's important, but sure, I don't have a lot of outside interest. And so, you know, I'm forever on my computer looking at stuff or talking to people and asking questions and trying to get better, because I feel I have an obligation to, you know, people depend upon you. You know, your players depend upon you to have good information for them. And, you know, so for me, I feel a responsibility relative to seeking out that information and from various different sources. There's not just one area. I mean, you can learn from, there's a lot of great stuff on Twitter. There's a lot of good people that are sharing thoughts and information. And like you said, I'm very fortunate because I can access a lot of video and you know, it's one thing where, you know, theoretically, you think it works one way, but in reality, when you really start to break it down, we don't always see what we see or see what we think we're seeing. And when you're able to break it down 1,000 frames a second or in one frame at a time, you see some things a little bit differently. And also, you find that there's a very large standard deviation relative to what are good mechanics. You know, well, he's got good mechanics. So I don't know even what that means anymore. Right. You know, he's got good mechanics for him. You know, you just look at pitchers and you look at hitters and they all have a little different style and a little different approach and a little different rhythm and a little different balance and timing. And really more than anything else, it's given me an appreciation for the need to adapt to the individual differences of each player, not only physically, but from a personality standpoint as well.
That's really good, and I'm going to go a different route here than what we originally had on script. You know, you got a quote, and it's relative to your last comment. You got a quote that I've heard that's, coaches are like guardrails on the highway. We're meant to keep players just on the right path. And certainly that mentality is relative to this point. The trend for players, as you, I'm sure, run into, is they're very dependent on coaches. They always look to our coaches for adjustments or coaching cues instead of just being their own best coach and really knowing thyself and knowing their best swing, knowing they're being grounded in what they're about and making those adjustments. But to that point, Jerry, how, in your opinion, would you get players to become more invested and responsible, less codependent, and really start owning their individual development?
I think probably in the last 10 years that's been my main focus.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people in general, you know, they want that silver bullet. Just tell me what to do. And they abdicate their responsibility for their own development. And I always tell them, hey, the best lessons are self-taught. You've got to figure this thing out. Because in all reality, the good coaches, they view their job, basically, if I do my job, I've eliminated my job. You know, if you need me to coach you, I haven't done my job. If you're a codependent guy and I got to tell you what to do, you got to figure this thing out for yourself. And when you take that approach and you know, more of a Socratic questioning, well, what do you think? Well, what are you going to do? Well, how are you going to handle it? Because ultimately, it's a very solitary pursuit. Baseball, for sure. You know, it's very one-on-one. It's you against the ball. It's you against the pitcher. It's you against the hitter. You know, it happens 300 times a game if 300 pitches are thrown. So being able to control the controllables, which is what you basically, how you approach things and how you choose to approach things, and learning how to do that on your own without someone else having to tell you exactly what to do is the goal. And so, you know, I try and devise drills and approaches where, without using a lot of verbiage and without, you know, I've gotten away from the mechanics of the game. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to put players in an environment where, in order to execute a particular drill and accomplish a particular goal, it addresses mechanical issues. I know when I was on the big league staff and with the Rockies, and pitchers were, you know, in between starts their season, I'd always want to see what's going on and seeing what they're working on and what they were executing and so on and so forth, because I think it was very important for the catchers relative to their plan of attack for that guy's next start or next outing. And it was always like 95% mechanically oriented. Well, I'm working on this and I'm working on that and I'm working on whatever. And then the game starts and it has nothing to do with mechanics. It's all about making pitches. And so, you know, my observation, you know, in conversations with pitching coaches and bullpen coaches is, you know, the most important thing is making pitches, and our preparation has nothing to do with making pitches. Our preparation is all about mechanics for the majority of it. And when we revert back, in times of stretch, when you revert back, it's always the thing that you emphasize the most, so they get really mechanically oriented. And really, I don't care what your mechanics look like. It's the quality of the pitch, you know, and I think that process is important, but the end result is the most important. So it's almost like I like to backward chain from, you know, my thing is quality pitches produce quality mechanics. And sometimes we try and have this guy look a particular way mechanically, but there's so many variables involved that we forget about the end result, which is the execution of the pitch, or for a hitter, the ball flight. You know, good hitters create positive ball flight. You know, if it's Juan Pierre, it's a hard ground ball, low line drive. If it's Adam Dunn, it's a high line drive, fly ball. So really what you're looking for is focus on location, execution of that pitch, target, and then as a hitter, ball flight. And simplify it in that way, and then create a drill environment that is very close to the game to create muscle memory. I'd say nerve myelinization, you know, where we have a conditioned reaction to that stimulus.
Okay.
And without a lot of talking, you know, I say they hear it, they forget it. They see it, they remember it, they do it, they learn it, and they teach it, they learn it forever. And so I try and put them in an environment ultimately that where they can mentor and teach other people to do the things that they do. And I think when that happens, it really becomes ingrained in that neuromuscular environment.
You know, I've worked for a guy, one of the best hitting guys I've ever been a part of on staff, and he adopted this philosophy, Jerry, where it wasn't so much, we never talked mechanics, we never really talked, you know, slot and elbows and knob, we never talked any of that. We just put him inside of drills that basically, and for lack of a better term, tricked him into doing exactly what we want him to do, and it honed the swing exactly the way we wanted it to be, you know, to maximize efficiency. Now, can you go into, and you kind of dove in a little bit, can you go into maybe pick a pitching type drill that you would implement and give us the cues around
let me go into a hitting drill.
Okay.
Number one, which from the big leagues right on down to T-ball, we probably are really in my opinion, missing the point in terms of how we prepare hitters to be successful, because we haven't made a lot of progress over a long period of time, at least if you look at the statistics.
We're going to dive into that full-fledged.
Like for me, okay, yeah. Well, here's the thing for me. The most important thing in hitting and pitching, throwing, fielding, whatever, you know, it gets down to balance, rhythm, and timing. Those are the three elements that are the most critical. And for a hitter, for instance, if you're going to be a big league hitter, you got to be able to do two things. Number one, you have to be able to hit the fastball. And now the fastball, you have to be even better now because the average fastball has gone up in the last 10 years.
Sure.
Close to 3 miles an hour. And inning 7, 8, and 9, the fastball is going up like 5 to 7 miles an hour with all the big arms coming out of the bullpens. And so now if you can't hit the fastball and you can't hit the fastball inside, you better get your lunch pail ready to go, because you're not going to be a professional player. You're not going to be a big league player, most likely. Now, I'm sure there's an outlier that is a breaking ball hitter that is somehow found a way to be successful. But in general, you better be able to hit that fastball and fastball in. Well, how are you going to learn to do that? One of the things that we do traditionally and when we first teach hitting is to me, the purest swing is you take a fastball in, especially low and in, where it's pretty much got to be pulled. You hit it down, you hit it between the left fielder and the foul line, down the left field line, where it doesn't have any hook and doesn't have any topspin. Now, no teaching at all, just a goal. And then we let the individual player organize his body. So whether you do it from close BP that assimilates or simulates 90 plus miles an hour, or use a pitching machine, I'm not concerned, but I want that speed. Now, not from day one, we'll start off and work our way up to it, but continually work that drill in to where they can get pure line drive, because the pure swing is the pulled line drive on the left field line, the one that doesn't have hook or topspin.
Mm-hmm.
That swing plays on any pitch in the strike zone, because all you're doing is the contact point is a little bit deeper, even though it's out in front of your body. It's a little bit deeper on the ball away or the ball in the middle of the plate and then as relative to the ball in. So now once that hitter can do that, then he's got the self-confidence to know I can get to the ball in, I can see the ball later, and I'll get more information off of the ball flight to where I can interpret where the ball is going to be. I don't have to cheat or swing hard or produce any extra effort to get to the ball in or the guy's maximum velocity. So now I'm in a position to hit everything else. And so for me, that's the number one building block when I'm working with hitters.
That's great. What about from because obviously catching is a strong suit of yours as well. What about from a catching standpoint or even a pitching standpoint? What would be a way to really simplify to get them to accomplish what you want them to ultimately do?
Well, catching is there are a number of skills that that are critical. And you got to be able to catch. That's number one. And there's probably more technique discussions relative to that. And then blocking and then throwing and then game management, which is a whole different, more of a cerebral experiential type environment. But everything starts with stance. And so, that's the foundation for everything to do with our catchers, getting them in a low enough stance where they can react from a low position up. But when you start breaking individual things down, it's specifically, let's say blocking, which is a very unnatural act, because when a ball's coming at you 95 miles an hour or a car is coming at you 95 miles an hour and you're in the street, your self-defense mechanism is going to move you out of the way. You want to get out of the way. That's why so many guys get doubled on line drives, because they react hard to line drives.
Sure.
And they have to re-educate themselves. So now in that blocking environment, so now you have some specific goals relative to beating the ball to the spot and obviously working up to that 90 plus miles an hour, which then you gradually progressively work into having them learn how to organize their body. The goal is to center up on the ball and ball hits your body and your body is relaxed and not tensed up where the ball drops very close to you. So obviously there's some cueing, probably a little bit more cueing relative to, you know, techniques and, you know, but it all involves it's a collaborative effort. Like we're working with catchers and, you know, the guy's not getting this particular area. Well, what are some things you think we can do? Well, you know, my stance or, you know, how I weight my, you know, the anticipation. Am I properly weighting? Is my weight distribution right? So we're talking about mechanics or we're talking about techniques, but it's not initiated. I'm not initiating it. We have a goal. We got the ball's, you know, kicking 15 feet off our body. Well, what do we got here? Well, I'm probably too rigid. I'm too tense. Or, well, how are we going to fix that? Well, you know, exhale, roll my shoulders. But, you know, eventually we get, you lead them in. It's kind of like a guided discovery.
Sure.
You know, and you move them in, and that gets back to that that guardrail analogy. You know, we just put the guardrails up and keep them moving in the right direction. And pretty soon they figure out what they have to do for them based on their physical tools that they have relative to quickness, agility, flexibility, strength, so on and so forth, that that is going to allow them to accomplish a particular goal. And throwing, you know, from a throwing standpoint, the number one most important thing for me is rotation. You know, the pure, the more 6-12 rotation where there's no wasted spin side to side, the more inline carry you're going to have, which is important because inline carry keeps the ball up, especially if you have a good spin ratio, you know, and you know, if you can increase your spin ratio, that's great, but doing various different things. But also this, the axis of rotation is critical. So one of the things I do is with all my throwers, we throw with stripe balls. You know, we've got a black stripe with a Sharpie across the four seams so that we're constantly getting feedback on our throwing and the rotation. So it becomes more purposeful. It puts responsibility on the individual player, various things like that, throwing down the foul line so that you have a gauge to see if the ball's moving, cutting or tailing, which you don't want because that distance will magnify bad rotation. When you get bad rotation, it takes off forward velocity, makes it tougher to catch. So, I mean, various things like that, you know, pitching, you know, we're talking the same thing about pitching. Pitching is just target practice, being purposeful in all our throwing activities relative to target orientation, finding the right intent to produce velocity, but also produce high target hitting ability. So those are all things that, you know, so there's a lot of trial and error, but we just try and keep it simple. You know, I'm missing high, aim low. I'm missing in, aim out. I'm missing out, aim in. You know, let's not complicate this process where you're up on the mound figuring out where your eyelash is relative to, you know, your release point or these types of things. And the teaching process down to where it's really, really simple and getting the player to find a way to trust his body to execute the particular goal. And everybody will have a little different way of doing that. We're all wired a lot differently. And you're talking about millions of nerve endings and millions of muscle fibers and, you know, the ability to execute a particular end game skill is not depending upon doing it exactly the same way all the time. I mean, all our biomechanists and exercise physiologists with their electromyographic studies and so on and so forth shows that, you know, for instance, a free throw that's swished is never the same by the same guy. I'm from the same position on the free throw line. You know, it's all a little bit different. When you sign your name, it's always a little bit different. So the people that can adjust to the variability, a little bit off balance, a little bit faster tempo, breaking ball, fastball, you know, whatever it happens to be, I'm a little bit out in front. How do I compensate? You know, I think that the people that have the ability to compensate for the variability of the environment, those are the guys that produce the most consistent outcomes.
Wow. That's some great stuff. I think, you know, I mean, that was one of the questions we wanted to get to. You've basically given us the blueprint on how to really simplify this battle over process and results. And if I could kind of, you know, surmise it in my mind and get it out, it would be, you've basically given them obtainable goals and ultimately results, and you're letting them foster the process. You're letting them really own it, and they don't realize it, but they're becoming their own best coach. Is that about sum it up?
Pretty much, but I think also when you think it, the challenge in coaching is finding the right drill, because the drill ultimately is the teacher.
Sure.
And finding the right practice modality for that individual to accomplish his goal. You know, and also the individual player finding out what he needs to do relative to, you know, whatever the cue is or whatever the goal or whatever the drill is or whatever. And there's no bad cue. What we would deem maybe a bad cue might elicit the type of movement pattern that we're looking for. And that makes it a good cue. So there's not one thing. And I always talk about cues, and we say some things, you know, certainly in hitting, which hitting's a tough thing to talk about. It's kind of like politics and religion. Everybody has their paradigm and they're very strident in their belief that their way is the way. But we've talked a long time about putting backspin on the ball and hitting down on the ball and hitting the top of the ball. Well, none of that happens, mm-hmm. and none of that will work.
Right.
Now, you hit the top of the ball, you're going to hit the ball on the ground, brother. You're not going to backspin that ball, and and you swing down on the ball. You're never in the pitch plane early enough to adjust for missed time swings, but it works for some players. So in that sense, it's not bad. It's just not accurate. You know, as long as we put them in a movement, in an environment where they get the right movement pattern, it doesn't matter what you say.
Right.
I mean, there's Franz Bosch, who's that biomechanist, who's been in track and field primarily, but is starting to venture in baseball. And he's, you know, he talks about, you know, American coaches. You guys really talk a lot. It's a good thing is your athletes really don't listen, so don't worry about it. So,
that's good insight.
You know, I think there's some truth to that as well.
Sure. No, I can see that totally. Hey, let's stay on individual player development, because I know that's definitely something you're passionate about. And I want to ask this question because I've heard you talk about, you know, the Rockies have the hands-off approach. I think it's 25 days from the time they enter professional baseball. There's not a whole lot of coaching and more getting to learn that player and getting to learn what he's about and who he is. But in your opinion, I mean, how do we shift the focus for coaches? Because as you know, you've lived it as a high school college coach, we're judged by the scoreboard, we're judged by wins and losses. And how do we shift, though, just moving closer to really not so much worrying about those things and getting more into just developing this player as a person and a player?
Well, that's the challenge. The challenge, sure, the balance between individual player development and the scoreboard. That's one of the beauties of minor league professional baseball. You have permission to fail, and the scoreboard is very secondary. Now, not that you don't want to win, because ultimately we're trying to produce not just big league players, but winning big league players, and they have to know how to win too. So that doesn't become a non-entity. It's still a factor. But the thing is that we need to realize that you get a high school kid. Let's just take a high school guy, mm-hmm. a freshman. He's 15 years old. Well, he's an 8-year veteran of his mechanics. He's an 8-year veteran of his way of doing things. And we get him in professional baseball in 2021. You know, they're 13-year veterans. So you start to make a lot of different changes. I mean, it happens. It happens. We try and tinker and make adjustments, and they work sometimes, but often, after a while, you end up going back to a guy. Hey, you know, when we signed you, you know, when you did this and did this, let's go back and do that.
Right.
Because it's tough to reinvent guys.
Sure.
It's tough to get that done. And really what you want to do is work within that guy's skill set to make that better and not totally try and rewire him. Now, sometimes you have to because of concerns for injury, and sometimes you have to because the way he is probably not good enough to do what he wants to do or what the organization wants him to do. You know, it might be a strength or flexibility or agility thing that you're working on, you know, different mobilities and constraints that fun, and you have to work with that. But you also have to work within the skill set of the individual player, too, and see if you can get him to do the things you need to have him do within his basic skill set as well. Hey, I'll tell you one thing.
Go ahead.
you know, and you know, this has been one of my big, you know, big bugaboos, you know, is how we train hitters relative to preparing them for games. And for all, stop me if you want to go in a different direction.
No, you walked right into my spider web. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. We're a good team.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the big leagues right on down through youth league baseball at the lowest levels, we pretty much train hitters the same way. Mm-hmm. 99% of our work is done off the tee, underhand, front flips, mm-hmm. and basically coach pitch. Feel good BP and that's nice. But you know, usually what happens is, or often happens, you know, I really felt good and he popped up twice and rolled over once and punched out twice and can't figure it out because we're not preparing for the speed or complexity of the game. And here's the thing. Now I'm not saying you eliminate these things, and I'm a proponent of them in moderation. You have to find your sweet spot. Take the tee, for example. Well, how does that have anything to do with the game? It has absolutely no speed. There's no change of speeds. There's no plane. It's always on the same plane. It's always in the same spot. So that has no carryover to the game where the ball's coming at 90-plus miles an hour as well as 68-plus miles an hour on different pitches. It's coming with at a plane that's somewhere between 4 to maybe 11 degrees downhill plane. Coming in, it's coming out. I mean, how does the tee replicate anything that goes on in the game? And plus, the way the tees are constructed, we're basically working over the ball because you don't want to hit the tee, so you're working over the top. So your swing plane has a steep downhill plane, which when you do that in the game, it never gets into the pitch plane. Mm-hmm. So then we go underhand front toss. Now the same thing. It's well below game speed. The trajectory, instead of downhill plane, it's got kind of an uphill plane. If we were going to face Jenny Finch, we'd probably be okay. It's coming, we're basically same place all the time, maybe in, maybe out. And it's so slow and uphill, and the release point is so different. And then we get into BP, and now a good BP thrower is a good BP thrower. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means that there's no balls left in the cage. Every pitch is a strike. Every pitch is the same speed. If you happen to cut one or sink one, you know, the hitter wants to know what's going on there.
Right.
They're swinging every 3 seconds as opposed to every 15 seconds in a game. Plane, they throw up this little flat platform. The plane is flat. So now we're taking all these swings, basically trying to hit line drives or whatever we're trying to do. So we create this swing plane based on no plane with a tee, an uphill plane with underhand front toss, and a flat plane with in BP on the field off of the little platform. And so now we've created, now we're just breaking the furniture in the third deck, feeling really good about ourselves, and then we throw that swing out in the game, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work consistently enough for us because we created an unrealistic swing plane, and there's no complexity, and there's no change of speed. And I'm not saying that we eliminate that totally. That, you know, that's a warm-up activity, but that can't be what we do 99.9% of the time. And if you look at the way that, I mean, when Chip Kelly was at the University of Oregon, he changed college football. Mm-hmm. The tempo, up-tempo practice, speed of the game, so on and so forth. And that's, in my way of thinking, what we need to do in baseball. We need to minimize the use of the tee if we're going to use a tee. I'm a real big believer in some type of inverted tee or Ron Buono's U-verse tee where the ball swings. So you're working on timing and rhythm and timing. That if you're going to do front toss, that you do overhand front toss where you create some plane, like sit in a chair and throw and create a speed and also a rhythm that they're not, that they swing and they step out. They reset after each one in BP, that we elevate that platform like what we did this summer in the Cape is we brought pallets along with us. So we every time we went, even on the road, we'd elevate the back of the platform to create that downhill plane, and we put the platform close enough, depending upon what the velocity of the BP throw was, that it approximated 90-mile-an-hour reaction speed. Mm-hmm. And then also we'd set the machine up, especially when we're at home, set the machine up so we would blend. And we used a machine that we could program, so we'd program it for fastballs and breaking balls, and we'd take BP, and the hitter didn't know what is coming. Now, ideally, if you had a BP thrower that could do that, you know, that's what you'd like to do. So we kind of re-engineered our batting practice, our preparation, so that we could approximate game speed and game complexity. And so that, you know, we're working closer to the demands in the game. I think that really that makes so much sense to me, but we're so steeped in tradition and we're so much a slave to our routines that with experienced players who are 8 to 15, 20 years experience, that they have a tough time re-engineering their routine to prepare better for games. Hopefully somewhere in the future, I think with some of the new virtual reality stuff that's being developed right now, that maybe that's going to help us as well.
Let me ask you, while I'm sure every listener's thinking the same thing, you had a great summer. I mean, the Gateman, you guys had a great year, but how did those players, you're talking about the upper echelon players, how'd they react to those changes? And like you said, they've been trained. This is what BP looks like, feels like, smells like.
They didn't like it. They were uncomfortable. And, you know, we're kind of like the parent that's so concerned with this individual kid's self-image and
sure.
God forbid he should ever fail. And, you know, and keeping people in their comfort zone. Well, I don't want them in a panic zone,
right.
But I don't want them in a comfort zone all the time. I want them to be in a challenging learning zone, a high percentage of time. Now, early on, especially when we hit a lot off of the machine and really turned it up, and they're using wooden bats instead of aluminum bats, and they're getting blown. I remember our first day, we had these composite bats and we broke four of them. GM wasn't very happy, and we had to go to a different composite bat. But the fact of the matter was that eventually I think our guys really benefited and they appreciated. You'd have to ask them, but
sure.
I think that ultimately they understand that I don't have to be comfortable all the time, that we're raising the bar and putting some challenges in front of them, and
yep.
And if you don't, then they never learn to deal with adversity.
Yeah,
and we had two guys. I'm not going to give you their names. They started off really good in the Cape. They were a third and four hitter, and the Cape this summer. You know, one of the prerequisites. And I sent a letter out. I said, look, we're really going to work hard. We're going to get out early. I don't care how you play. It's not about the scoreboard. It's about your individual development. But you have to be committed to working smart and working harder than you've ever worked before. And I don't care if he goes over the Cape. Well, these guys pretty much took me literally. They started out real good, and our 3 and 4 hitters both went 2 for 35.
Oh, wow.
At one point in the season. So they were 4 for 70. Didn't say anything. Didn't do anything.
Sure.
You know, then and really what happened is they got away from their process,
because yep.
At a certain point, the scouts come in to the Cape and really scrutinize the players, and they're very
sure.
much aware of that, because that's why a lot of them come to the Cape, because they're trying to establish themselves. And so, you know, 3 and 4 guys, and both of them were corner type players, and you know, they were, you know, power's a big part of it, and so they were trying to demonstrate in BP every day how much power they had. So they were, it was a big lift and separate mm-hmm. Fiesta, and they got into a top spin hook mode, and yeah. Carried into the games. And you know, finally, we had a come-to-Jesus meeting and sat down and said, well, what do you think here? All I'm doing is rolling over to second base. Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to fix this thing?
Yeah.
Are we going to do it here? Yeah. Well, what are you going to do? Why is this happening? And, you know, we started, you know, it was a protracted conversation individually with each one, and they both came to the same conclusion that they got to do better in batting practice, and mm-hmm. instead of cheating and leaking and hooking, you know, they had to start going back to the off gap, and both of them ended up hitting right near 300 for the whole summer and regrouped. But it was a tremendous learning experience from them, and it was based on their efforts, not on anything that I did specifically, other than kind of, you know, that guided discovery thing.
That's it.
You know, and it forced them to figure it out, because if you don't figure it out for yourself, you may get it fixed. Someone may help you. But you know what? That guy may not help you. Even though he's well-intended, he may not have the information that's specifically going to help you, or the drill environment, or whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. Or they may just send you back to Albuquerque.
Sure.
And let you figure it out,
yeah.
You know, there. You know, but I think that failure is good. And, you know, Ryan Holiday wrote a good book called The Obstacles Away, and I think that's interesting for people, especially young athletes, to read that, you know, that having to struggle and having an obstacle and having a barrier, and failure is a great teacher. If you want to be great, you know, you're going to have to deal with it.
That's it. There's growth to be found being uncomfortable, you know, and that's the part.
Without a doubt.
We're going to stay on that because that offensive approach, I had another kind of a follow-up question, because if anybody follows you, you're always putting out videos or tweets or ideas, and you're showing a different side of Major League Baseball. You're showing a different side of really what a lot of college coaches might see as players are becoming somewhat one-dimensional. And you're a real big advocate for being multidimensional and looking, you know, various shifts, looking for opportunities, applying pressure offensively. I mean, you're really kind of giving us some insight on how to create more options to score runs. And again, it's got to be relative to your league, and you got to be able to do it efficiently. But you're at least really challenging coaches to evaluate why they're doing what they're doing to speed up the game. Can you talk about that a little bit, just that aggressive offensive approach mindset that you have?
Well, I think ultimately every hitter in your lineup, we'd hope that he have the typical number three hitter skill set. You know, they can run, they can bunt, they can execute, they can make productive outs, they can move the ball. More importantly, they can take team competitive at bats, because competing is above all the most important thing you can do once you step in the batter's box. But just having a broad base of skills, you know, especially. Not only in the batter's box, but certainly on the bases, and learning how to advance yourself and create run scoring opportunities, because that run scoring mindset is critical. And and having as broad a base skill set as possible, because you know you see what's happened to these big left-handed pull guys, you know, that aren't diverse enough to hit the ball the other way or bunt
right.
the ball or whatever. They're getting crushed.
Yep.
So I know in instructional league this year with the Rockies, Zach Wilson, our farm director, said, "Hey, we're gonna bunt as a group every day. We're gonna make it competitive. We're gonna make it game speed." And we had a segment, like a 30-minute segment every day with all our position players in groups, and we have a bunting station that has three stations where we can divide guys up and they can bunt different pitches and you know, execute, you know, base hit bunts and sacrifice bunts or whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. And when we left after 3 weeks, our guys were greatly improved relative to their technique and their ability to execute against game speed, breaking balls, fastballs, etc.
Yeah.
Because it was a point of emphasis.
Yeah.
And I think our philosophy, and everybody probably has the same philosophy, well, we want guys to be able to do everything so that I'm not hamstrung as a manager. Oh, I can't hit and run here. This guy swings through too many pitches. You know, it's kind of like I tell them. I said, look, when I turn on the television set, I put Channel 10 on, I want to see Channel 10. When I ask you to hit and run, I want a ground ball out of the middle. When I ask you to run and hit, you know, I want you to swing at a particular pitch, and I want a ball driven in the gap, or if we're going to sacrifice bunt, you know, this is, you know, we know that we can count on you to do this, that we're not hoping that it works out or start scratching off stuff that we can't do because we don't have an option with you as a player to do this, this, and this, or we got to run for you, or we got to do this or that because you don't have a particular skill set. So, you know, I want players to have as many diverse options as possible for that manager. If I'm a minor league instructor or coach or manager, that I want, you know, I want the next guy to be able to do what he wants to do with this player as much as possible, and that player have as many tools in that tool chest as he can.
It's easy, I think, as anybody listening to this, Jerry, it's easy to hear your grit and your passion for the game and development and the players and the coaches, but it's growing our game. I think you're an excellent steward of the game, if I don't say so myself, that you've done a great job of really challenging coaches, but getting them to think maybe outside the box a little bit or pursue being a lifelong learner. And I just want you to talk about that a little bit. Like how important has passion been for all of us to really apply that to what we're doing, the players that we're coaching, if I'm a player, my teammates, but also grit, because I know that's something you're passionate about when it comes to how that relates to on the field. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think when you go to the ballpark, whether you're a player or coach, that you go to the ballpark, not only for yourself, but for your team and the other members of your team. You know, and I wasn't a very good player, and I always felt like, you know, I knew, or my desire was, I said, well, I really like what I'm doing, but I'm not going to be able to do it very long because I'm not very good. But I figured that my way is, well, I'm gonna learn how to mentor other people and make other people better. And I think that on championship teams, your best players, your best physical players, have that mindset. They can not only can they play, but they also are there to help the other guys get better. Mm-hmm. And they make the people around them better. That they're just not going to the ballpark to get theirs. You know, it's about what can I do to help the people around me become better. And I think as a coach, you know, that's pretty much the job description. You know, you're there to help people get better, to make them better players, but also better people, because, you know, the good teams have good people on them.
Sure.
You know, bad guys that are just selfish and just out for themselves, you know, probably you don't see a lot of them on championship teams. And so I think that, you know, not only just really liking what you do, but also being there for the group or for the certain individuals in the group is certainly critical every day especially as a player when you come to the ballpark. And that's one of Angela Duckworth wrote the book Grit, and she talks about that extensively, about the importance of being there, not only really being purposeful and doing everything that you can to be as good as that you can be, but also having that same mindset relative to your relationship with other people on your ball club or on your team.
That's great. I'm going to tee up this last question for you, Jerry, because I know we've taken a lot of time. We're so thankful we've been able to sit down and do this. But if you can kind of put an exclamation point on this in terms of giving some advice to young coaches. We have a lot of coaches across all levels, youth, high school, college, even some professional guys that listen into this podcast. But what's some advice you would give as like you mentioned earlier, in the twilight of your career, looking back, what are some things that maybe you wish that you knew then that you could impart and maybe set guys on a different positive path now?
One of the things that's important and it doesn't always happen is make sure that you are where your feet are. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
I think guys are always they're always looking for that next job. And I tell guys, I said, hey, there's no perfect job out there. Mm-hmm. The grass is brown everywhere. So, at one point in time, I was the director of player development with the Dodgers, and we had a really good minor league staff. And one of the things I said to our staff, and I said, well, everybody here wants to get to the big league. I said, the way you get to the big league is get your players there first. And so, you know, I talk to young coaches and they want, well, I want to get a college job and I want to do this. I said, well, you know, you start off first by being really good where you are, whether it's you're coaching a little league team or a high school team or a JV team or a freshman team or a club team or a summer league team or whatever it is, or a community college team. You want to get a 4-year job, or, you know, do the right thing by your guys there and make them as good as you can. Be devoted to those guys, not looking for your next job, and everything that you do is directed towards what's in for me in terms of the next job. Take care of your guys. Take care of the guys you're with right now. That's one thing. And then the other thing is, and something that we were always known for at Sacramento City College, is tempo of the game. But before I go into that, I'll just say one thing.
Sure.
Like relative to the players, and this is really, really, I should have mentioned this before because this is really important. Everybody's important on your team. In the minor leagues, 6% of all the players who sign get to the big leagues. So 94% of your players in the minor leagues are never going to get to the big leagues. But for me, the best minor league systems are the ones that create value out of those other 94% of the players. I don't care if a guy's a first-round pick, if he got $5 million, if he got 50 cents. I'm going to treat those guys all the same relative to the amount of attention I give those guys. Your third-string catcher or your 13th pitcher on 12-man staff, I'm going to spend the quality time with that guy. I'm going to try and create value out of that guy. In professional baseball, if you create value out of what your people deem as non-prospects, you may create value in someone else's eyes. So maybe that this guy, player A, is a non-prospect for your organization, but there's a trade brewing with another organization, and one of their pro scouts have seen this guy play, and they like the way he plays, and they want him to be a throw-in on that trade, and that's the thing that makes that trade. So you're always trying, and that's the same thing. I can't tell you how many times at Sac City where a lot of times we had guys redshirt, and we would have guys there for 2 years, and, you know, the in the back of our mind, we think, whoa, man. And we never cut people.
Right.
If this guy plays for us, we're in trouble. 3 years later, he's the MVP in the league.
Wow.
And so you just never know how people are going to progress and develop. You know, my thing is not all the fruit on a tree gets ripe at the same time. So you just never know. It's not an exact science. But getting back to the point I was trying to make before I came back to that tempo of the game, I think we're obligated. We need to speed the game up. The game has gotten way too slow. It's become a coach's game. It's become, you know, picks and conferences. And I'm guilty of that as much as anybody. But now, and certainly this summer, you know, we move the tempo of the game. We want guys to pitch faster. We don't want to wait till the hitter gets the signal. We want much faster tempo. We want one of the things that certainly best speed, running hard. It's just not acceptable, disrespectful, not to get on and off the field and not to run your best speed on the bases. And those are things that you have to you have to stand behind. And no matter who it is, if it's your best player, he doesn't run hard, you got to take him off. You know, and I think another thing with getting back to young coaches, they want the players to like them,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they sacrifice their standards or don't apply their standards equally because it'll make some guy they're not comfortable with confrontation. They're not comfortable, and I'm not talking about yelling or screaming at guys. I'm just talking about holding your standards equally for all your players. And Salinas gave a tremendous talk many, many years ago. He had a home plate strapped around his neck, and he was talking about widening the plate.
Sure.
You know, the strike zone is 17 inches yep. in Little League. It's 17 inches. But and kids want you to widen the plate for them because they can't throw the ball over the plate or they can't meet your standards. And don't do it. You know, hold to your standards no matter what. And sometimes – it's going to cost you some games, maybe, but in the long term, you lose the battle but win the war because of holding on to that and holding people accountable and forcing people into, you know, the people talk about today's youth is the national pastime is transfer of blame. You know, it's not their fault. I don't see that as the case. I think that our leaders are allowing that to happen. And as a coach or instructor or manager, you know, if you do that, then you're setting a bad example for your players. And we need to accept responsibility for all the choices that we made. We need to have standards. We need to hold to those standards. As John said, we can't widen the plate for people. You know, they have to figure out how to get the ball over the plate, how to meet the requirements of this particular environment. I'd much rather have them respect me than like me, and I've had conflicts with players. As a matter of fact, when I was a farm director again, I told our staff, I said, you know what, when your players like you too much, I'm concerned.
Right.
Because, you know, we may be buckling, mm-hmm. and we may not be consistently upholding our end of the standard
sure.
situation. I said, they may not be happy with me today, but 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, it's kind of like, you know, when you go out, you know, you become 40, 50 years old, all of a sudden you have kids, and you said, oh, my God, I've become my father. Yeah. I'm talking just like my father. And a lot of times the guys that you've coached didn't have that intimate contact with for 3-4 years and spend a lot of time with, mm-hmm. you know, they either go out as coaches or as parents, and all of a sudden they become you. Oh my God, I'm talking just like you talk. It's a little scary.
Right.
I said, well, it's not all bad.
I tell you what, being an ABCA podcast, to have a John Scalinos reference, Jerry, is important. I mean, what that guy did for our association and who he was for the game and to the game. Thank you for telling that story, because it's all that 17 inches speech is legendary, and it's to that point of
yeah, it certainly is.
Absolutely, keeping our guys in line and keeping it on home plate. Jerry, I cannot thank you enough, man. If I was around you, I'd give you a big bear hug right now. I mean, this has been certified audio gold for our coaches. I'm telling you, man, this has been great. And we're excited about getting this out. We're also excited about seeing you in 1 month in Anaheim. But to close down our calls from the Clubhouse podcast for the 2016 year, Jerry, we could not have found a better guest. So thanks for the time. We look forward to seeing you here in a month or so.
Okay, Shade. Thank you. Enjoyed talking with you. Look forward to seeing all the guys in Anaheim as well.
Boom. I cannot think of a better way to close down shop for 2016 than to have on one of the very best minds in our game and an ABCA Hall of Famer, the legendary Jerry Weinstein. Wow, tremendous insight on this one, guys. We know you enjoyed it. One of the many things we hope that you could have taken away from this episode. We hope you heard Jerry's thoughts on challenging the status quo, thinking outside the box. If there is a better way out there, find it. And that's what Coach Weinstein has done his entire career. He's motivated by the impact he's had on his players and growing the game of baseball, and we cannot be more thankful for the opportunity to sit down with a legend. Thanks again, Jerry. We appreciate your time, your energy, your efforts. You've been a great example for all our coaches, and we appreciate you being on our podcast. We keep hammering this point, guys, but it's important. We all must continue to be lifelong learners. Seek out information, other opinions and thoughts, and never settle on our place in the game. I've heard Jerry say this before, the older I get, the stupider I get. And that just really boils down to ask more questions, engage with more coaches, have an open dialogues and discussions. It's just a great game we're involved with, and we owe it to ourselves, our players, and the game to keep growing, studying, developing. It's awesome stuff, guys, and we appreciate your dedication. If you've enjoyed this episode and you're interested in our previous Calls from the Clubhouse shows, you can find a complete listing on our website, abca.org. If you click on the resources tab at the top, Calls from the Clubhouse podcast is going to be right there waiting for you. You can click on it, check out all the great shows that we've done to this point. You can also check us out on iTunes. You could subscribe to our show, and each time a brand new episode's published, it's going to show up on your phone or your computer. This was our last episode for 2016, but don't worry, this podcast is coming back to you with perfect timing to kick off February and the start of a brand new season. And as always, where we continue to work to connect you with the best minds in our game. And we've got some very big plans for 2017, so stay tuned. If you're on social media, we are too. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We're at ABCA1945. We always love a great tweet. Love getting a message from you guys, especially getting registered for membership or coming to convention, but also the great things you're out there doing with your players and your programs and impacting your communities. We love hearing that stuff through our social media platforms, guys. Engage with us. We'd love catching up with you. Also, if you're a coach that's craving more baseball knowledge, and guys, and you haven't heard about hashtag ABCA chat, you might be missing the boat. These have been extremely impactful for the guys that jump on. You're talking about the Tuesday after the release of a podcast at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As we turn into 2017, we're going to move back to Mondays. I know it's going to better fit our baseball schedules, but the whole key, guys, is that it's a great way to connect with coaches from all over the world, share coaching information, network with one another. They've been such a huge hit. And even if you're listening right now and you don't know anything about hashtag ABCA chat, go to Twitter, search ABCA chat. On the computer, click on latest. If you're on your phone, click on all tweets, and you can start scrolling back and check out every ABCA chat that we've ever had. Have access to that information. Click into that, guys. You will not be disappointed, and it can help you grow and develop. Again, my name is Jeremy Schiedinger from the ABCA, and you can find me on Twitter at CoachSheets3, or shoot me an email at Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. Love hearing from you guys through Twitter, through email. It's always great to get feedback. We appreciate the testimonials that are coming in. And again, keep reaching out to us, guys. We really appreciate it. And if you're serious about coaching and you're serious about your development professionally and personally, the ABCA was created just for you. $45 is it. And we give you so much more with liability insurance. We'll send you our press box, which is our weekly email with coaching articles, Inside Pitch magazine, rental car, hotel discounts, plus part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity, guys. It's all about you, our coaches. And we love working for you here at the ABCA, and we hope to see you jump on board with us. And apparently there's some big event going on in January. I guess I need to look into that a little bit, but I'm sure you've heard about our annual ABCA convention. It's going to be out in Anaheim, California, January 5th through the 8th. Registration is still open and even will be on site, but we love to see you and your staff reserve your spot with us for Cali. We're talking 25 coaching clinics from the very best minds in our game. We have hot stove discussions, 300-plus exhibitors in the world's largest baseball trade show. It's a beyond positive experience for our coaches. It's a can't-miss opportunity to connect and reconnect, network and grow, and we hope to see you guys in Anaheim with us. Thanks again, coaches, for listening in. We are so thankful for your loyalty to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. We wish you the very best as we move into 2017. We hope you and your family have a very Merry Christmas, and we hope to hear from each of you very soon. Last but certainly not least, guys, keep growing, keep developing, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.